972-3084. You have a chance to call in, and I answer questions. You know the format, the first half hour. But let me just, we're going to do this right. I'm putting in my tape and talking to you at the same time. If you want to call and ask questions, the first half hour, I didn't get to see too much of the conventions. You may, they were talking about it in here. If you want to talk about the Democratic Convention, the candidates, your impression of what went on. I'm going to turn this on so we get the phones in here. This is, there we go. Now you should be able to call in, and I'll be able to hear your call. Any books you read that are interesting along the subjects that we discuss here, or any TV shows, current TV shows that you saw listed? Did you watch the Olympic Torch wandering around town here? Came down Carmel Valley Road? Hello.
Hello, May.
Yes.
I have a question that's not related to what you just said, but, okay. As Hitler, when forming the Nazi Party, was actually an intelligence officer named Schicklgruber,
uh-huh.
and his intelligence officers take orders,
uh-huh.
then who was really in command of the Nazi Party in the Third Reich? Who was giving the orders?
You mean if Schicklgruber was starting out? Well, there was no actual Nazi Party. He started with a handful of people in Munich. It had another name. He didn't join the Nazi Party and take orders. He formed the Nazi Party.
Oh, I see. But so he no longer was taking orders once he was in command of the Nazi Party?
Well, he wasn't. No, he was giving the orders.
Oh.
He was very much in control. But the people that put him in assumed that he knew what he was doing, or else they wouldn't have put all that investment into him.
Right. So those people, were they like industrial magnates?
Yeah, like the people, say, that put in President Reagan or right. Jimmy Carter. They know what they want, and they groom a person from childhood
right.
to do what they want so that they're not taken by surprise. If they're taken by surprise, they can kill them.
Right.
Like John Kennedy, if you don't take orders, once you're in, you can be wiped out if you're not very nice and
right.
don't obey. So it was, I forget the name of the party, maybe somebody listening would remember. The party was a small, hardly known group in Munich, Germany, just a handful, like 8 or 20 people.
Right.
And then when it got to be 20 or 30 or much larger, I have all the statistics on it, at home in some of these books on Germany, of course. It just got, he went to jail for uprisings and wrote Mein Kampf there and got out, but he was in control of what he declared the Nazi Party.
Right.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like he was this, you know, single charismatic leader. He was working in unison or being directed by or being promoted by.
Well, he had a lot of people around him that were sympathetic to what he was doing.
Right.
Just like if Reagan's name is James Baker and Edwin Meese and William Wilson, the team that works their way up, because you just don't sprout to the top, they all are simpatico to the way you think and reason and feel or what they think about other people.
But it's just that the whole force of the movement seems more than can be accounted for by one politician.
Well, I think the genius of the movement is it represented what people feel.
Right.
See, they resented for years, the British Empire and all the ships and all the places they had and controlling the world, or the Spanish that conquered Mexico and South America and Central America. And there were, you know, a lot of people that had spread the Muslim Empire from North Africa all the way even goes to Philippines. But the Germans were a very small group, kind of landlocked, and very bright and energetic, like the Japanese on their little island. And
they were suppressed after the First World War.
That's right, and they seemed to have a equal intelligence, if not superior, at least equal.
Right.
And so they wanted territorial gains, like the Ukraine and these various areas for wheat and places to build ships and to compete with the British Empire, and the French had a lot of, you know, colonies in Africa. The Germans wanted not to be closed in.
Yeah.
And so they developed a party that would get them out of the disgrace of the Versailles Treaty and all the blame for World War One.
Do you think when it was at its inception then it had some of the ambition that we now associate with Nazis in the world in terms of the world, the plan?
Well, it would be equal, say, to the pilgrims that landed here and kept plowing everything down as they went west, the same kind of ambition. The people are people, and when they find out there's something out there and that they can have a piece of the action, whether it's the gold mines or
the railroads or just moving in and taking over the Indian territory and not even calling them Americans and saying it's ours when they came from Ireland and Italy and all these other countries. Yeah. It was that same kind of territorial grab. I guess the answer is whoever is the strongest wants what's ever next door.
Right.
So that you don't have to organize a party per se. All you have to do is say, hey, look at what they did. They closed us in and we can't, you know, be industrialized the way we want. We need more land, so let's go for it.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, last week we were talking. Somebody asked me about the Illuminati. They called in. It was hard to compete last week. We had Mr. Como on. I'll take this call, then I'll do a little bit more update as part of that question last week. Hello?
Hello, May?
Yes.
I'm calling from Santa Clara, so I'm outside the range of KZU. I can't hear what's being said on the air, only the telephone.
Oh, I see. Okay.
2 weeks ago in your broadcast, you talked about intelligence agencies spreading diseases.
Yes.
Which were specific to certain ethnic groups.
Uh-huh.
And among others, you mentioned sickle cell anemia for the blacks.
Yeah, I believe that this is a thing they could target for the blacks, yes.
Okay, well, you didn't cite any references on that, and I was wondering if you don't have something at hand, whether perhaps in next week's broadcast you could...
Okay, I'll look up the... there were CIA reports in the 70s. I'll look them up for you, where they were going to target specific racial groups and even separate certain things in food and milk that would make them susceptible and die, whereas somebody else drinking the same milk wouldn't have it. And the intent was, for example, something is on the store pantry, the black people drinking would die and the others wouldn't, but then in another part of town, the Asians would die and the blacks wouldn't. And the CIA's experiment on racial biology. And the reason I was suspicious was the coaxing of people, black people, to keep coming in and getting their sickle cell tests. And yet, over a cross-section of people that I've known or I read about, it is not that common. I mean, to make a big program about this, the sickle cell tests are done out at Fort Ordon on military bases. It's interesting enough. The private doctors don't seem to be alarmed or have this kind of thing. And just like Tay-Sachs, it's supposed to be for Jewish people through genetics. And I've gotten letters, if you're Jewish and your children are Jewish, go out to Fort Ordon, have your testing. And my first husband was a pediatrician, and I know a lot of the patients he had and raised five children and known a lot of other pediatricians, and I can't recall a single Tay-Sachs.
Okay, yeah, well...
You know what I mean? It isn't a common kind of a thing. Can you think, do you know people that have sickle cell?
No, I don't, but on the other hand, I know very few people who are of 100% black African origin. Most of them have mixed blood of one sort or another.
Yeah, it just seems to me, what I threw out was the possibility, not the absolute proof.
Sickle cell is a recessive gene.
Uh-huh.
So that you have to inherit genes from both parents in order for it to be fatal.
Or with DNA or gene experiments, when you begin, there's massive testing now on women that are pregnant for various conditions and diseases. And I'm not so sure, say, given, if you read Pearl Buck, The Good Earth, and you read about women on different islands, say, who had no tampering, no CIA experiments, no mind control or any kind of medical experiment, just the old good life native population, what percentage of people have what are termed now, recognized or identified as these special kinds of diseases for particular people? We know that there were bacteria and worms and different kinds of things in South Africa. But I just wonder what percentage of these diseases are in other countries. It should hit a cross-section absolutely even in scale based on population, not just in America.
Okay, yeah, well, the point is that it is a disease which ordinarily is passed along by inheritance only.
Uh-huh.
And so how can it be induced in...
Well, see, I wonder if at the time you're pregnant, you know, if
when you just have these cells just multiplying, if you can tamper with them when you go in for your first exams in some way, can you induce it rather than cure it? Was it inevitable, or is it possible to induce it?
I've never heard of anybody being that far along in gene splicing to be able to do that sort of thing with
Well, at one time they were pretty far along, and Joseph Mengele's was working in Auschwitz with gene splicing kind of experiments, and that was 40 years ago. If you look up some of the medical experiments, they go way back, and the intent for harm goes way back. See, that's the only thing I worry about. We know that they're not a certain percentage of blue-eyed people, but when you take somebody who conceives and you alter them in a way where you make blue-eyed babies, what else can you make? You see what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, why not just let those that have blue eyes... Why was it so important to Mengele's 40 years ago and up to the present to have blue eyes for people that ordinarily wouldn't have?
Well, that was part of his definition of the super race.
Yeah, but if they're super, why don't they grow their own eyes? Why do you mess around with their cells? Just pick the ones that happen to have blue eyes. You know, that's like injecting half a cup of sugar into a peach, because peach is a sweet summer fruit. If it's a nice fruit, why inject all the sugar?
Okay, well...
Maybe that's not a good example, but
yeah, yeah.
What I mean is, Mengele's was working with twins.
I don't think I'd be able to answer the why, because I can't think like them.
Yeah, well, I think one of the problems...
The real issue is the what.
No, one of the real problems about solving some of these questions is that because we don't think like them, we can't come up with solutions to how far along they are, except by reading articles of what they intend to do or did in the past. See, Mengele was doing massive work on twins to see how they responded to all kinds of genetic and otherwise, and we don't think about that. We think, well, whatever is born, you develop it and nurture it, and we don't think manipulatively. But when you go through the history books of the medical centers and the kinds of things they're doing, you have to ask who and why. I think so. There was... obituary of a doctor this week who passed away, Dr. Cutler. Probably most people wouldn't even notice it, and he was old enough to die. I don't think he was murdered, but the article caught my eye because he worked with Dr. Loyal Davis, Nancy Reagan's father in Chicago, who was a terrible racist, and he was a gynecologist. And they were working on radiation for brain tumors and worked at Rockefeller Center. Well, Loyal Davis's specialty was delivering babies, not brain tumors. And yet people like Otto von Bolschring died of these super nuclear brain radiation kind of symptoms, and these men were working on radiation in the brain cells. And, you know, sometimes when you see who the cast of characters are and what they're doing, it's far afield from what their specialty is. And I'm not secure enough with the system yet to think that everybody who does these things has the best intentions.
Okay.
Particularly when they're avowed racist and so forth.
Yeah, okay, well...
Okay, I'll look up some of those things I have on it and see what there was that triggered me. There had to be in my pilot article something that triggered me to come to asking the question, not having a positive...
Okay, yes, well, it's sickle cell anemia in particular that I'm concerned with, because...
Okay.
My understanding was that it wasn't really possible to do that.
Okay, well, I think one of the good questions to ask is how many cases in America each year and how many, say, overseas in proportion to the black population?
Yeah, I know that in his younger years, Linus Pauling researched sickle cell anemia.
Uh-huh.
And he spent a lot of time on it, apparently because it was really, at least at that time, it was a very serious disease in Africa and causing a lot of fatalities.
Mm-hmm. Did he do anything with it over in Africa?
I don't know what success he had.
Yeah. I mean, where did it go? I call a thing like polio and the salt vaccine is finding a thing, battling and solving, and getting on with the next. You know, I don't know Pauling, why he dropped it. It'd be interesting to get... I have a lot of literature on the disease, but I've thrown it into a section called medical, and I haven't updated it for a while. But there was reason for me to suspect that a lot of the things that are targeting particular areas of population could be targeted.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that there are diseases which are targetable. That one, at least, you know, my information is very old and I'm not an expert on it, but my understanding was that one, it really wasn't possible to do it. And
well, I think if women stayed awake, got pregnant and just stayed awake until they delivered, it would be impossible. When you start injecting the uterus and the pregnant woman almost from the time of conception now, I think anything is possible.
Okay. Well, if you come up with something, would you put it on a broadcast?
Sure. I'll put it on the World Watchers part.
Great. Thank you very much.
Okay, this is Kazoo, KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove, California. It's Mae Brussel, 375-3082. If you have any questions, call. If you don't have, I'll just get back to a couple of comments about the Illuminati. We briefly mentioned it last week. Somebody called in about it. The Illuminoids is a book by Neil Wilgus, W-I-L-G-U-S. I have books on this subject. There aren't too many, but there are a couple of sentences here that I might share with you. It's a long, almost 400-page manuscript going from the early time of the Illuminati up to the present, and this was written about 1975. It said the Bavarian manifestation of Illuminism began May 1st, 1776. A man, Adam Weishaupt, W-E-I-S-A-U-P-T, controversial and aggressive professor of religious law, founded the Order of the Illuminati. At first, Weishaupt and his co-conspirators were attracted to the idea of attaching themselves secretly to the Masonic Lodge and taking it over. And that was widespread in Europe and America. And then this book goes into Freemasonry and Illuminism that uses secret rites, grotesque ceremonies, and it tells how the group grew. It says, like a whole generation of thinkers in and out of Masonry, the Illuminati was in open revolt against the feudalistic monarchy and dogmatic religion which still retained power in Europe. And that's what I was trying to explain, that was a reaction to feudal religions, and I believe particularly the Catholic Church, and this is why the British and Americans were so strong in joining the Illuminati and the Freemasons. By 1784, membership reached 3,000. During the critical 8 years of the American Revolution, which began with the Declaration of Independence, in 1776, a secret revolutionary organization was active in Europe. And it tells about the complaints put against the order of being subversive against religion and against political authority, that they were trying to influence the schools and the press, and the pressure was put on Maria Anna of Bavaria, who tried to close down these societies and stop them from being active to break down her power and the power of the church. And interesting, they talk about the power of the press in 1784. I wonder how much press there was, but I guess there was. Weishaupt fled Bavaria in February 1785 and continued to defend the Illuminati, and the home of a friend, a Mr. Zwack, Z-W-A-C-K, was raided. This reminds me of the P2 papers of Licio Gelli, and fell into the hands of his close friends, a Baron Bassus and so forth, and they got some information. One group had fled, and they got information on the Illuminati. May 9th, 1798, in a sermon delivered in Boston by Jedediah Morse, father Samuel Morse, who later built the electric telegraph, the sermon was dependent on this, the publication of the proof of the Illuminati, and warned that the subversive Illuminati survived the Bavarian suppression and caused the French Revolution and now may be working in the United States through the Masonic lodges and coming into the United States so that they would merge and have information on each other and gain their power. This book goes into a lot of details, even the problem of mind control going back to those early years and the use of mind control training by the Jesuits and others who became too humanistic. And they mentioned people, alleged assassins like Guiteau or Oswald, and even Donald DeFries of the SLA. Were they all guinea pigs for a behavior-controlled technology that was being perfected way back in 1745 and in 1748, that the methods of controlling people and using them for conspiracies and murder goes back to that early time period? This book goes into the round tables and Cecil Rhodes of the Diamonds in South Africa, and I'll be doing more on that in a little while in World Watchers when I talk about Henry Kissinger. Rhodes, the Diamond Baron of South Africa, was financed by the Rothschilds, and this book tells about the secret societies that the Rhodes were establishing and the round tables, financed by money from 90% of the world diamond supply that went into secret societies. Hello?
Oh, hello, mate.
Yes.
Yeah, speaking of mind control, the massacre down there in San Diego, did you happen to read the articles on it?
Oh, I read some of them, yes.
Especially, did you happen to notice the part where he was talking, where his wife was telling the press that for days before this happened, he was hearing voices.
He was hearing voices. I know.
It's in the article. In fact, it was in the one today in the Mercury.
I know. What I have to do, like I do with these things, is take all of them and then extract what is interesting. He was hearing voices. He also said he was a war criminal. He'd never been in Vietnam, but he put on his combat outfit, like the shootout down Los Angeles of the former Jonestown member.
Mm-hmm.
He moved into an all-Latin area where he never spoke Spanish or had anything in common with him, and came from Babcock.
Ohio.
Well, that
came from back in Ohio.
Yeah, but the plant that he worked for was Bechtel, atomic plant.
Oh, that, yeah. I didn't get that.
Yeah, Babcock and Wilcox is Bechtel's atomic energy plants. And then he becomes a security guard like Mark David Chapman. I'm going to write a book on how to start World War III, like the Reichstag. I think we could do a short story. And you have a profile of 1 to 10. Was his mother divorced when he was 4? Was he raised by a mean stepmother? Was he put in an orphanage or a juvenile home, and did he escape when he was 7 and had nowhere to go? You know, like, you have multiple choice.
Mm-hmm.
Did the father beat him? Was he alcoholic? Did he leave and never show up and he didn't know him? Or was he killed at war before he was born? You know?
Well, they gave a pretty good, I can't recall, I don't have the paper in front of me, but they gave a pretty, what they're saying is his history.
Yeah.
And that, you know, even back when he was a child, that he had his problem. He was a problem child, very high strung.
Yeah, you know, these men never smile and never say hello to anybody.
Right.
And he sells a home in Ohio and has money to buy another home, and he came from Mexico. They all travel.
Oh, that's us. Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, she came from Mexico.
They hear voices and they travel all over the world.
They hear voices and they travel. And also, the shootout was the night of the Democratic Convention. If you look up in a little history book, the most outrageous story that took all the news away from Jimmy Carter was the Chowchilla kidnapping.
Mm-hmm.
That, again, was men who spoke French and had a long hair growing out of a mole and a tattoo, and they bring in those three kids. They don't have anything like that.
Mm.
They said those aren't the people, and that took all the press. First papers I saw, I didn't see too many last week.
Another thing that was happening during the convention was the fact that the boys were up there playing in the Bohemia Club.
Oh, yeah.
The last 2 weeks, they just, in fact, that was, nobody ever heard anything until the article I think I saw today was some demonstrators were arrested.
Yeah.
But they had already left. They had whatever meetings they did. It was Kissinger was there, if I'm not mistaken.
Gerald Ford. The Bohemian Club action, I had it on the air. If people wanted to go up there, and I don't know if my friend Roger was arrested. He's the one who organized it. He was down here to talk to me about it, but that's not my cup of tea. You know, when they were going to put up posters like, have you hugged your child lately, or nuclear arms, you know, won't wrap around your child. Those are such cliches. They've been on buttons for 10 years. I mean, I would still like to say, is Fritz Kramer here with you, Henry Kissinger? See, I mean, I tried to get him, you know, to make signs that really said something like, you know, Hail to the Chief. Where's your mentor? Last year or 2 years ago, they played Hail to the Chief when he came in. And Henry, have you polished your tutu? You know, have you put on the beads for your tutu? What color is it this year? Something. Yeah, they wear those, Buckley. And, yeah, they have a big coffin. They bury care because our problems aren't their problems anyway. And
that's totally bizarre.
Oh, yeah, and they get into ladies' clothes and say, oh, yeah, they all look like Boy George. This is their time to howl. They were meeting July 20th to July 28th. That's where they mutually blackmail each other. I have the list of the different cabins and where they stay if you want me to put it on the air sometime. And the names of the cabins, it's a riot. Roger gave me this. I mean, it really is funny.
these heads of states, and I don't know if it's funny or not, but...
Oh, and speaking of Mengele, on the Today Show this morning, did you have to see that?
Oh, yeah, I was going to mention that on the World Watcher segment. What did you think? They're real going out gung-ho, aren't they, for Mengele?
They say he's in Paraguay. Isn't that somewhere near where Lucio Gelli is now?
Well, Lucio Gelli's in Argentina and Chile, but Mengele's is in Switzerland, Florida, New Jersey, Indiana, and California. Miami, for sure, he's in all those places. And they said that for national security, they wouldn't give the investigators his aliases.
Mm.
So that has to be for Mengele's. It's interesting that Carl Wolf died this week. Now they're going after Mengele.
Yeah.
And Mr. Ralph, Walter Ralph, had his empty, I think it was an empty coffin ceremony. I think what they'll do is put the heat on to get him, let him expire, have an empty coffin with a lot of goose-stepping and swastikas, and then they'll go off wherever they go.
Well, I think it all ties in with the Vatican, because, like, the Pope went on vacation, and, you know, he met with the, well, he happened to be at the same ski lodge I think the President of Italy was at also. So they obviously were discussing financial problems.
Yeah, well, on a ski, you know, that's a nice place to do it, because nobody can hear you, not wiretapped and all that.
Yeah,
I mean, if you want to go away, I wish I knew how to ski. Then nobody would listen to what I'm saying. Well, listen, some of that I'll just briefly talk about Mengele tonight and do more some other time. I've done so much on him that he's almost a household word. Some people even know his name now. I was down in L.A. for a week, and with a lot of people, not one of them mentioned Carl Wolf being arrested. And when I brought up the subject, they said, oh, who's that, you know? Somebody that everybody, at least the people I was with, should know. But they're the last to know. Okay, listen, thanks for calling.
Okay.
I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, they have. Let's see, up till July 28th is the Bohemian Grove, if you want to catch them floating out. This is just the 23rd. Just one more. If you want to call in, 375-3082. If you have something to say here, and you want to share information that you've seen in the paper, or you think I missed, or things you want us to see, now is your time to do it. It's Mae Brussel. We have about 4 minutes. I'll just quickly jump to some of these stories. This book on the Illuminati talks about the Rothschilds and the Warburgs and how they worked with Cecil Rhodes. And I'm bringing this up now because it ties in with what I'm going to put on World Watchers, and somebody asked me about it before. At least Mr. Wilgus claims that the organizations were set up to begin World War I and the Russian Revolution to get the Russians started, change of government, get away from the Tsarists, and then I suppose weaken it and take it at that end to have a double whammy. I can't imagine why they wanted to begin the Russian Revolution, but in 1905, Germany and Great Britain were funding Japan to make war against Russia, big Mother Russia. A lot of diamonds and resources there, so maybe they wanted to get them involved in a struggle and then take over when the struggle was going. If they weren't strong with the revolution, they could come in and clean it up and have control, just as many of the British and French took good control of our government and policies, even though we had a revolution. This book deals about Colonel House, E.M. House from Texas, who was Woodrow Wilson's closest friend, and he with the Warburgs helped bring in the Federal Reserve System, and it suggests that being close to the Council of Foreign Relations and Mr. Cecil Rhodes and the Roundtable in England, that these organizations merged together with various meetings and places, and they became that secret government behind a government, including... Mr. House, Warburg, Rockefeller, the Morgans, Harriman, Baruch, and others. The Rockefeller Roundtable, the Council of Foreign Relations, got started in 1929 on East 68th Street. And a lot of this information quotes the Birch Society Invisible Government by Dan Smoot on the way secret societies get together and grow. And the names of the team members are pretty well laid out in this entire book. Prince Bernhardt, Herbert Hoover, Henry Cabot Lodge, the Big New Brzezinski, the three Warburg families, and certainly John McCone, ITT, and former CIA director. Certainly those names do fit in to what we call that secret government, and it has a way of overlapping all the time that we see these names in
both administrations, Democratic and Republican, and you see the names with appointments and with banking houses, and there is this allegation that these people got their power together a long time ago. I don't have time for a call because the light is on, but it's just exactly 1 minute up, so I'm going to have to turn off the mechanisms by which I take the call and go back to it next week, take some more calls.